Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
And the wolf is at your door.
This episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast, may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. It's a patron episode. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. Merry Christmas, y'all. If we owe you something, let us know. This episode, it's a homicide, and it occurred on Christmas Eve, 2005. And so let me give you some backdrop of what was going on in the story. The Christmas Eve, 2005, I was working as a detective for the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office. And at that time, my partner was Brian Paul Smith. And we were on the night shift. And Brian is now the chief criminal deputy for Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office. Good guy. We went to the academy together. We came up on the street together in the SRT. And then we actually worked in the detectives together before he went on to the training division, et cetera. But anyway, we're super, super tight. When you work the night shift, normally they don't mind. I mean, that's when most of the bodies are going to hit the ground and the good cases come out, et cetera. But Christmas kind of sucks. Christmas Eve. I mean, you can't drink and you can't party, and you just know, you better believe in that. If it's a holiday and you want to do something with your family, you bet your sweet behind the body is going to hit the ground somewhere. You're going to get called out. Or if it was your, birthday or something special. If you had something special to do and you were nights and you were to try to slide by, forget about it, because it wasn't going to happen. So this year was Christmas Eve. So when it was holidays, y'all, and the regular detective's office was all, if you were the detectives that were on nights that week, then you had to cover the whole 24 hours, you and your partner. So Brian and I had split it. I think I was doing the day part, and he had the night part. I mean, like, I would cover from 6 in the morning to midnight or something like that. And he would come from 6 in the evening to 6 in the morning. I forget how it broke down. It was something like that. Anyway, so I know Brian Paul had the late part, but we weren't going to call each other out anyway. I mean, you get called out for stupid stuff sometimes, but he wasn't calling me out unless it was a dead body or something that he needed help with. There was a lot of witnesses, something like that. But at about 3 o'clock in the morning, my pager goes off and it's 10:21, the radio room, which means give them a call. And I called and they said, hey, you need to head to Albany to, Skinner Lane. And you got a 10-7 in a car fire, which means there's a body in a car fire. And so let me tell y'all about that. I lived at the time I lived up in Watson, which is as far northwest corner of the parish you can get. And then the Skinner Lane is like a 200 yard long dead end road off of this road, which we call North Cafe Line, which is pretty close to the Livingston Tangipahoa Parish line. And it runs north and south. The North Cafe Line does. That's the area that I worked on the street and whatever. When you come into the town of Albany, headed towards east on Florida Boulevard, headed towards Tangipahoa Parish, it's the last blacktop on the left before you cross into Tangipahoa Parish, and it's North Cafe Line. Now, when you turn on North Cafe Line, immediately you hit the railroad tracks, and you cross those railroad tracks. And the first place on the left was E-Tops, which is a bar, a black bar. I'm not being racist. This is what it was. But on Sunday nights, God, I hate that Sunday nights. They came from New Orleans, Jackson, Mississippi, Shreveport. On Sunday nights, they would get like 1,000 people to come to this country black club. And we always had problems on Sunday nights. But that's as soon as you turn onto Cafe Line, then it kind of runs rural a little bit. Rural meaning there's nothing on the left-hand side, maybe a house every once in a while. On the right-hand side, there may have been a house every once in a while, but then you hit, you start coming up into about a mile down. You start coming up into the settlement is what I call it. That area is all settled and it's full of trailers and shotgun houses and stuff. It's a hood and it's this long stretch. The first street you come to that runs off to the right into Tangipahoa Parish is Ed Brown Road. But so right past, when you pass Ed Brown Road, which actually was a road that continued into Tangipahoa Parish, the first road on your left past Ed Brown was Skinner Lane. And Skinner Lane, you turn on it and there's like two old trailers on the very front to the left-hand side. It's like a gravel. It's not even blacktop. Oh, it wasn't back then. It's just a dirt road. And then so you turn on it and it dead ends like not even 300 yards. And you got the two old trailers on the left. They had a fire pit on the right about halfway down. It was a big field to the right. And then when you get to the back of it, there was a brick house and then a bunch of trailers and all just kind of haphazardly put out there. A lot of those people back there were the best people in the world. That was just where they grew up. But back at that time, that was before meth became prevalent, and it was the hot spot for crack and weed. I can't tell you a time that I didn't go down that road and not arrest somebody on a traffic stop or get in a foot pursuit or vehicle pursuit or whatever. So anyway, I get the call and I call Brian Paul and he said, Brian Smith, and he actually lived on the other side of Albany and he graduated from Albany High School and he knew everybody down there. Back when we worked the street together, he introduced me to all the players, if you will, the drug dealers and the locals, the good and the bad. We didn't go down there and treat anybody wrong or anything like that. And the drug dealers liked us just as much as anybody else until we called them dope. So Brian said he was, already on scene when I called him. He said a car was fully engulfed in flames. It was parked at the end of Skinner Lane in front of the brick house that was back there. And so I kept coming. By the time I got there, Skinner Lane, I had to park actually out on Cafe Line because all the fire trucks and stuff that were blocking Skinner Lane. I had to walk down and got down there, and Brian already had uniform patrol tape it off. There was definitely, it was a burn up car, and you could, but you could see the victim, the deceased person, we didn't know it was a victim, burn up in the driver's seat of the car. Now, if you've ever seen a burnt body, you won't forget it. One that's totally burnt up. That's, it's almost the smell is, it's almost a sweet, I don't want to say pork smell. The body, when they're really burned up, I'm not talking about partially burned, I'm talking about like extreme heat, was what we call a crisper, is burnt to a crisp, to the point where when you shine the light on it, you could see a human form. But it was like the skin was so black. I don't know how to describe it. It's cracked. It looks like it's just solid black, maybe like a burnt piece of newspaper would look on the skin, but with cracks in it. And I mean, it's burnt. You couldn't tell if it was a white guy or a black guy. You could see his teeth. Like, I don't know how to explain that. They're not like a little piece of soot, but like big flakes of soot, if you will. But anyway, you'll never forget it if you ever saw one. But I remember looking at seeing Brian and looking at him, and Brian told me when we got there, he said that this guy's mama lives here, and he was able to run the license plate, which had melted off the car, and the deceased guy's name was Willie Jarrett, with two T's, and he said his mama lives here. He comes over every, I think this must have been a Saturday morning or Christmas that year, because on Friday night, Fridays, Willie got paid. And Friday night, Willie would go out and have some drinks. But every Saturday morning, he would take his mama fishing. Didn't matter how cold it was. But he didn't want to go into his mama's house after he'd been drinking. So he would always go there and just sleep in the car until his mama got up and came out. And then he took her fishing.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? I know Sydney was, and if you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, found in our food, water, and even in our skincare products. These disruptors can wreak havoc on our hormones. Believe me, before Hormone Harmony, I watched Cindy suffer. Not anymore. Hormone Harmony's formula, made only with herbal ingredients, have reduced Cindy's hormonal symptoms, and it helps women of all ages. Then there are the natural hormonal changes our bodies face, such as menopause. While these processes are part of life, they don't have to be uncomfortable. The good news is that you don't have to suffer through it any longer. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts known as adaptogens, designed to help the body cope with stressors, including those chaotic hormonal fluctuations that can disrupt your daily life. Whether it's PMS symptoms like irritability and cravings, or menopause symptoms such as hot flashes and night sweats, Hormone Harmony can help with it all. Happy Mammoth, the creator of Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to improving women's lives by using only high-quality, science-backed ingredients. They make no compromises on quality, ensuring that you receive the best support possible. This isn't just a supplement. It has become a phenomenon. Women are talking about it everywhere, with a bottle of Hormone Harmony sold every 24 seconds. And the most important benefit, women express feeling like themselves again, a sentiment echoed in over 30,000 positive reviews. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com. Don't forget to use the code RLRC for 15% off today. March is Sleep Awareness Month, the perfect time for you to think about the quality of your sleep and how the mattress you choose can make all the difference. Avocado Green Mattress is committed to providing mattresses that not only help you sleep better, but also are healthier for you and the planet. Did you know that with the right mattress, you can improve your sleep quality by up to 50%? If you're not waking up refreshed and ready to tackle the day, it might be time to consider Avocado and their sleep-enhancing design. Cindy and I love Avocado for so many reasons. Not only are the materials organic and free of chemical and toxins, Avocado mattresses promote better sleep through breathable, naturally temperature-regulated materials, which is so important to our sleep right now. Did I mention there is a mattress to fit your needs too? Avocado offers gentle to firm to plush mattress comfort and support. Take their quiz to find out which mattress and comfort option is right for you. Avocado stands by their products too. They offer easy financing options with a firm, sleep trials up to 1 year, and options to try before you buy. Head to avocadomattress.com today and save up to 10% on certified organic mattresses. Dream of better.
So this is, Brian had got all this information before I got there. And so when you look, can't say for sure, right, on the victim, but it's presumed that it was Willie Jarrett because it was his car and he's at his mama's house like he is every time he gets paid, every single time. And so, I mean, I'm like, okay, so we worked it and there were a couple witnesses. And the one thing I'm not going to do is name the witnesses' names for obvious reasons later on. So we started kind of like just talking to the people on the street. We knew them. We'd arrested a lot of them, but we were cool with them. We didn't mess anybody over. And Brian knew them all, being from Albany, et cetera. So we talked to the witnesses, and they said that they had seen Willie pull in around, I don't know, 3 o'clock or something like that. And these were some witnesses that were standing at that fire barrel I told y'all about. And they saw him pull in, and then a little while later they saw the flames. I mean, because it's not that far from where the fire barrel was. But we're not thinking anything. I mean, they didn't see anybody supposedly at that time. They didn't see anybody or anything like that. So we're not hoping. We're kind of hoping it was just a car fire. Maybe the guy fell asleep with a cigarette in his mouth or something, and it was an accidental death. But we didn't have anything to go on that to say that it was homicide. But naturally, we had to treat it as if it was a homicide till we could prove otherwise. So we just did the scene, talked to people, witnesses, work as we always do, and get anybody that may have been down there. Now, look, at 3 o'clock in the morning in the hood, ain't nobody out except for the dope dealers, the crackheads, the local crackheads, and then the crackheads that are driving down there to buy their dope, right? And, or people coming in. So it's not like we had a whole bunch of people to interview. And so when we wrapped it up, coroner came out, we took the body out, bagged it and tagged it and sent it for the autopsy. And I went home, and that was a wrap. And Brian, but the autopsy couldn't get scheduled. So I'm thinking that was a Saturday morning. The forensic pathologist couldn't come do it to like the Tuesday after Christmas. I mean, so it was like several days. Hell, I forgot about it, to be honest with you. And we wrapped up our week of nights at the end of that Sunday night, Brian, Paul, and I did, and we were off Monday and Tuesday. Tuesday, I get to hit on a pager. It's Brian. Call me. I called him, and he said, hey, man. He said, I went to the autopsy. He said, it's a homicide. He said, the dude was stabbed to death. So I'm like, fuck. And all right. So, okay, I'm rolling. There goes our days off, right? So we went and met and, you know, just got together and got the game plan together, met with everybody. And we knew we had to go down there and hit the hood hard and shake the trees. We had to locate our original witnesses and get them in, et cetera. And find out what the truth of the story is, right? See if anybody wants it. Share more than they did that night. Our plan was go down, scoop them up individually of each other, the three witnesses, and bring them in and interview them separate of each other. And so we did that, and we brought them in. And the first one, this lady was the biggest crackhead on North Cafe Line, but she was cool. I guarantee you, if you catch her walking on the street, she also was a prostitute. And I guarantee you, if you catch her on the street, she was going to have what we call a horn, or what they call a glass dick, which is a crack pipe. She's going to have two things she was always going to have on her, was a crack pipe and a razor blade. And she'd always tell me, they call me the wolf. She said, well, you know, I ain't afraid to cut a MF-er. She would carry the razor blade, like the disposable razor blade. She would carry it in her mouth, and it's the craziest thing. I mean, I'd say, I don't want to say her name. I'd say, you know, I'd pull over and say, what's up, girl? And she's like, you know, I was out here working, trying to get my dope. And I'd call in dispatch and have them run warrants on her, make sure she didn't have warrants. And then, talk to her, BS with her just on a day-to-day basis. And I'd say, show me your blade. And she'd whip this razor blade out on her tongue and whip it back in her mouth. So she was cool. I mean, she was a crack addict, lifelong crack addict and a prostitute, but she was cool with us. And I've arrested her numerous times. And she, the other thing she loved to do, you knew she wasn't holding any crack when you came down the road and she saw a blue and white coming. She would, well, I should say, I'm going to leave that. I'm going to retract that statement. She was a character to say the least, but just because you're addicted to crack, you're a prostitute, that doesn't make you a bad person. She still was a human being. She was a cool, woman, and she always helped us out when she could. And this time she really helped us out because we didn't have anything. We had nothing other than the three of them at the Fire Barrel who saw Willie Jarrett drive in around 3 a.m. And then a few minutes later, they saw the flame. Well, problem with that was that wasn't true. Actually, there were four of them at the Fire Barrel. And this is according to her when we get her in. There were four of them at the Fire Barrel. And the other guy who they had admitted, his name was Brian Williams. Now, I've arrested Brian Williams numerous times, and he had a crack addiction, but he's a big dude. And I think he and Brian Paul actually played football together in high school. And then I've arrested Brian's brother, Ivy, numerous times. I did foot pursuits with him and all kinds of stuff. And hell, he worked as a trustee washing cars at the jail and could detail a car better than anybody. So we had history with these people. What she ended up saying was that Brian was there. And then when Jarrett pulled in, he said, man, I'm gonna go get me some money for crack. And I'm gonna go hit a lick. And, the other three stayed by the barrel. And she said that he went down there and then, a few minutes later, he came running back by, but it cut across the field. And then they saw him coming back across the field. He was carrying a gas can. And then within 20 seconds, they saw the big burst of flames and they didn't see him again. So probable cause, yes, certainly probable cause but then we had to flip the other two. One of them was hesitant at first and then, we kind of drug it out of him. And then the other one just gave it up straight up also. I mean, like I said, they're all of them had lengthy arrest records, what we call frequent flyers. And the problem with that is that, when you get three witnesses that say originally, and that's the hood code, right? They're not going to rat. That night when everybody's listening and when something happens in the hood, everybody comes out, right? I mean, so by the time I got there that night, there were hundreds of people around and, certainly they didn't want to be seen talking, to the popo. And I get that, but now we're in the interrogation room. They know it's a murder. They didn't at the time know that. They had to figure it, right? He said he was going to go do a robbery and they saw the flames, but they didn't know he was stabbed to death. So anyway, we got their statements. Then we know we got to go get Brian Williams in to talk to him. But we also did some other investigation. He got paid on every Friday and all that stuff. So this is a multifaceted approach also. We got doing this thing, getting up the background work with Brian Paul and I are interviewing those people. We get the statements. We go find Brian Williams and he was higher than shit. High on crack when we found him, and he didn't run. He didn't have any warrants. And he's fought us before plenty of times. But when he wasn't high, he's a good dude. I mean, he was just nice and polite as could be. But we bring him. He's like, man, I don't want to go in. And I'm like, we were rolled up on Inner Skinner Lane, and I said, dude, you coming in one way or another? I said, you know this about? He said, man, I ain't do shit to Willie Jarrett. I said, well, then come on in and tell us about it. You know, you take a polygraph. And so he ended up coming in. And we brought him to Denham Springs PD to, I didn't have the polygraph at the time with me. And I think it was Scott Jones, the Gator, the chief, who was at the time the chief and the polygraph examiner. Great guy. His daughter, actually, she's a lifer. She's a huge fan. And they're going to be coming to the live shows. But the Gator gave him the first polygraph.
We all know I love me some tacos. They're great every night of the week, not just Taco Tuesday. But Cindy really wants me to eat healthier this year. And Factor chef-made gourmet meals have made eating well easy. Factor arrives fresh and fully prepared, perfect for my busy lifestyle. With 40 options across 8 dietary preferences on the menu each week, it's easy to pick meals tailored to your goal. Calorie smart, protein plus, or keto. Factor has it all figured out. My favorite meal has been the jalapeno sweet corn polenta and chicken. Imagine a whole chicken breast marinated in lemon juice, garlic, and smoked paprika, grilled until juicy, and topped with a zesty salsa verde. It's served over a creamy Parmesan polenta loaded with diced jalapenos, corn, mozzarella, and scallions. Bell peppers, red onions, and cauliflower are served on the side with fajita spiced butter. It was delicious and nutritious. Eat smart with Factor. Get started at factormeals.com/factorpodcast and use Factor Podcast to get 50% off your first box plus free shipping. That's code FACTORPODCAST at factormeals.com/factorpodcast to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
And it was in the morning time, and Brian, Paul, and I were watching through the window, the two-way window. Shit, he couldn't stay awake. I mean, he didn't give a shit. He had him attached to the instrument. And I mean, in the middle of the questions, he was nodding off because he had been on a crack binge for however long. Probably since the murder. I don't know. The dude made good money. It wasn't like he was working at Walmart. I think it was like a couple grand or something. He cashed it at ETOPS. So that's what he would do Friday evenings. He'd go to ETOPS, cash his check. He verified all that he did it again that night, like he always did, that he was there, he was drinking, and about what time he split. You can buy a lot of crack with a couple grand, right? So anyway, Brian Williams is passing out during the polygraph, which Gator could only, the only thing he could do is say inconclusive due to the examinee's failure to comply with the rules of the test. So basically, we had to bring him back to Albany and let him go to bed to go back and get him the next day. Went back, got him the next day, bring him in for the polygraph, and he absolutely failed it. And the questions were, did you stab Willie Jarrett? Did you stab Willie Jarrett Christmas Eve night? It was what we call a yeast face test. It was a real short question test. And anyway, he showed deception indicated, wasn't cracking. I mean, he knew that he had no eyewitness to the actual stabbing. I mean, it was dark down there at the end of Skinner Lane. It's not like it's a lit subdivision street, et cetera. But, and he knew he burned up all the evidence and with the gas. And he's a frequent flyer. I mean, he's a killer. So we tried and tried to flip him and whatever, but all we had were the problem with the whole case is all we had were the witnesses at the fire barrel who he was with. And Jarrett pulls in, he says, I'm going to go hit the lick. And then they see him run across the field, coming back with the gas car on fire. The problem with the case ended up being the witnesses. Two things, actually. The witnesses and the victim. Now, Willie Jarrett was a hardworking guy, but he's just a average Joe Schmo. His family didn't have any kind of political pull, and I think his mama was elderly, and he didn't have anybody else, any brothers or sisters to raise hell or whatever. And I'll tell you what, we made a warrant for Brian, and it was a good, solid warrant, a probable cause warrant, based off the statement of the other three witnesses, what they saw, what Brian Williams said. I mean, he told them, and then, like I told you, him coming back with a gas can and running by and all that. Now, so we made the probable cause warrant, Brian Smith did, and we went and arrested him. We tried to flip him again. He immediately lawyers up, had the probable cause hearing, and it was upheld naturally. I mean, it was, y'all, probable cause is not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's 50% plus one. That's all it takes for an arrest. And, but the I had totally forgot about this case until yesterday. And I was thinking about what to do for y'all for like a Christmas related case. And I couldn't remember what happened. And so I was trying to look it up, and I couldn't find anything. I found a couple of news articles about the, us arresting him for the murder, et cetera. And finally, I texted and I asked, and it came back that they never took him to trial. They never took him to trial. The DA said the witnesses weren't, not that they weren't credible, that they didn't believe him, but that the witnesses were bad witnesses, meaning that they take the stand, then the defenses get to say, oh yeah, well, how many arrests have you had? And they open themselves up. And so you have to remember these witnesses, they're known. I mean, they'll tell you, if you saw them today, they'd tell you they're a crackhead. They're not ashamed of it. The first problem with them is getting them sober long enough to be a good witness. Your second problem mm-hmm. is, like the lady I told you about, that she was she was cool with us, et cetera, but shit, we probably arrested her. I'm not lying, like 50 or 60 times, prostitution, possession of crack cocaine, possession of drug paraphernalia, resisting by running or whatever. And look, she had some battery charges on her, meaning unwanted touching. With a weapon, she'd been arrested for a stabbing before and stuff like that. And then the guys, shit, they weren't any better. I mean, it was just, they had lengthy years and years and years worth of bad cases and charges against them, served prison time, the lifestyle. That's all they knew. And so they didn't prosecute, because now the murder charge will never go away, y'all, but I don't think it'll ever move forward. Maybe different people will get in office one day. We're talking what, 14, 15 years ago now, tomorrow night that this happened. And, I don't know, but I understand where the district attorney is coming from when they put these witnesses on the stand, that it's going to be easy to impeach them, if you will, to rip them apart. Because once they get up there to testify, then their whole history is open to be cross-examined by the defense. Problem with that is not everybody that's involved in murders or choir boys or angels. The only people that are there, like I said, at that time of the morning are people that are not very good moral, whatever you want to call it. And so certainly there's no school teachers hanging out on Skinner Lane at 3 o'clock in the morning. There's no librarians or and anytime there's a crime like that in that area, what I'm saying, especially that time of night, I mean, you don't get to pick and choose, I guess I would say, who your witnesses to crimes are. But I mean, I get it. I mean, I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. And district attorneys love to say they have a 98% conviction rate, and that's because they plead most things out. And guess what? Brian Williams, freaking flyer, he's been down too many times. He wasn't pleading to shit. He was going to take his chance on a murder charge with the jury. They offered him a plea. I think they offered him like 15 or 20 or something like that. And he's like, no, take that shit to trial. And they ended up not taking it to trial. So, but we know who did it. I mean, but it's just a tough case, and you don't always get the results that you want, like on what happened to Jackie case and stuff like that. Justice sometimes is not really justice, I guess. You know, and the jury's gonna look at them. The juries are made up of your peers, right? So you get business people and working people and people that actually go to church on Sundays and have families and all that. And they don't understand being out at 3 o'clock smoking crack or prostituting on Christmas Eve on Skinner Lane. So they can't relate to these witnesses and they, you know, they're already putting the skeptic side on it. Then Brian's defense attorney is going to say, oh, yep, you knew Willie went down there every Friday night, didn't you? You hung out at the fire barrel. And they would be like, yeah, you knew Willie got paid every Friday night. That's what you told the cops, wasn't it? Yeah. Then you went down there and killed him, didn't you? Of course, they're going to say no, but that's reasonable doubt. So, but anyway, y'all, it's just sometimes how things shake out. And it's funny that I was just thinking about it in Christmas cases. And so that's it. Got nothing else to say about it, I guess. It's a little bit different, right? But this is real life, real crime. And you're not always going to get, you know, the end dateline, end results and stuff like that of how it goes down in the trenches. The real life, real crime. So, but Merry Christmas, y'all. And thank you so much for being patron. We love it. We appreciate y'all. You know that. And so we're going to be adding commercials to the regular released episodes. Now, patron members, you will not only, when we can, we give it to you early, obviously, but you will never get a episode with a commercial in it. You will always get the episode released to you early when possible, but always without commercials. You'll get it unedited with no commercials. And we're at the point now in real life, real crime, but it's really going places, and we're going to add commercials, obviously, to help with what y'all give and support. It'll help us even more to grow and be able to continue to do this. So we love y'all. And yeah, there'll be other patron benefits coming up in the future also, but don't be afraid to use them. We love you. We appreciate you. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's, and hope you have, or Hanukkah or whatever it is you do. You know, hope you're blessed and you have a great, great, great holiday. All right, y'all, and peace.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door, you're running over, that's for sure.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.